Blog Talk Radio.
You met me deep in my despair to show me you would never leave me there. You claimed because I was made for so much more. I am your child, and I'm worth fighting for. Heavy with the weight of my mistakes, you carried me and refused to let me sink under the pressure you meant for me to soar. I am your child, and I'm worth fighting for. Eyes haven't seen, ears haven't heard. Separate me from your love when there's so much more still worth fighting for. Now I'm moving by faith and not by sight towards victory. By the power of your might, you're straightening out my path. Don't think every door, I am your child, and I'm worth fighting for. Separate me from when there's so much more. It brings is worth fighting for, and I'll be faithful to my wife and children because my family is worth fighting for. No, this world is not my home, but your kingdom here is worth fighting for. I got a mansion over in glory.
Hello?
Hassani, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What about... Okay.
Are we good?
Okay. What about now? Are you?
I can hear you.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Hassani Pettiford. He is an author. He is a love doctor. You have seen him on the TLC, CW Network, BET, TV1, TVN, CBN, the Wendy Williams Show, just to name a few. So, man, welcome back.
It's good to be back. How are you?
Man, all was well, man. We've been gone for almost 2 years. And life. That's what's been going on. Life, man. So
well,
we excited. Ready to embark on this next part two of 1821 Speak Life. I'm going to go ahead and bring Mr. Dondre on. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Man, I'm well. All is well. Thank you for coming on tonight.
My pleasure.
No problem. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Dondre Wentfield, and I am pronouncing that right.
Correct.
Okay.
Two syllables. Oh,
you've
yeah.
seen him on The Cosby Show, All My Children, in the movie Two Can Play that Game, 35 and Ticking, The Salon, Pastor Brown, BET, Real Husbands of Hollywood. So you've seen him on a few things. So I'm very thankful and honored that you guys decided to come on the show tonight to talk about this topic that is very pressing in our community. And hopefully through this talk, we can come up with some type of solution, some type of answer, some type of just something to help to change what's going on and to keep our people alive. So we want to go ahead and just crack right into it. So the topic, again, that we're talking about tonight is the crisis of police brutality in America. So who wants to jump at it first?
Well,
there's a lot to jump at.
Okay.
Correct. I mean, ultimately, in America, we know that African Americans in specific have been under the oppression of many forces, particularly police. But we're seeing that here in 2016, it's reminiscent of what was taking place in the 60s. At that time, there were many of us who were being beaten, hoses were turned on us, dogs were sicked on us. And so there was all types of acts of violence for African Americans who were protesting against the lack of rights and the lack of equality that we were experiencing. And it seems like in 2016, we're revisiting that same experience all over again. But now we're being attacked just for being black, you know, just for delivering mail, just for holding a cell phone, just for doing basic things. And so our human rights are being violated, and we're seeing hour by hour by hour in full 3D how African Americans are just being picked off.
Right. So what do you think has I won't say what do you think has changed, because I for one believe that racist people and the racist mind and attitude never left. I think it went under wraps for a minute. You know, it kind of hid in some things and some people. But I believe that it's always been here. But what do you think has changed that's kind of given it its boldness to rear its ugly head up, and not just passively, but just like, hey, we come in full force?
I don't think there's anything really bold about it, to be honest with you. I mean, boldness is when you say, hey, I am racist. That's bold. I think that the thing that is coming to the forefront is what we're seeing more is a lack of understanding and a fear of things that you don't have an understanding of. So when, you know, you are a person who doesn't interact with very many people of a specific group, just like, you know, to be honest, we have a lot of people within the African American community who are fearful of or who have prejudices or bias against those in the LGBT community. And because we don't interact with very many, we treat them a certain way or we look at them a certain way. And so when we interact with them from a space of fear at times. And that's just very true. I've experienced that my entire life, watching the way we interact toward one another. And we have some of these people in our own family. So I think that what this really speaks to is a fear of something that you don't understand. When you're not around people or groups of people that you don't have a full understanding of, it's very easy to live in fear of them. And then when they make movements that someone that otherwise is a part of your community would make, it seems to be a space of utter chaos. And this could be something that could, you know, bring damage to myself or put my life in harm or in jeopardy. And then you see that fear come to the front again, and they show up in a space that prevents them from being their best self in order to control themselves and to control the situation. So I think what we're dealing with is not so much a racism where people are going, oh my gosh, this person is this, or oh my gosh, this person is that. I think it's coming more from a space of, I don't know what to expect from these people because I don't interact with them, and nobody's coming from a space of trying to understand the other side.
Gotcha. So,
I'm not sure if you said anything, but I didn't hear that.
I'm sorry. Did you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yes.
Do you think it's going to get worse? I just don't really understand. I think I saw something on your page, Asani. Wasn't there another shooting? Was that today, yesterday, where the guy had his hands up or something like that?
Yes. I believe in the last 4 hours, there was a gentleman who was a therapist who was trying to assist one of his clients who happens to have a mental disorder. And I don't know all of the details that occurred, but according to the video, this African-American man is laying flat on his back with his arms raised up in the air, screaming to the police, identifying himself as not having a weapon, identifying his profession, explaining what he's doing to assist his client, yet and still he's being told to be still. He says, officers, I do not have a gun. I'm not in harm. I'm not presenting any type of danger towards you. And even still, he was shot. And when he asked the police officer, why did you shoot me? The officer responded, I don't know. So when your question becomes, is it going to get worse? I don't know how worse it can get. But what I do know is that the more and more we loop these experiences on television and on social media, what it's doing is it's awakening a giant. There's so many African Americans that are seeing this and becoming outraged. They may not know what to do, but they want to do something. And so now we're beginning to see the celebrity community using their voice and their influence to make a difference. You're seeing organizations that are being developed. You're seeing movements that are taking place all over the country. You're seeing the church now beginning to get involved. And I think it's actually a good thing. And I think sometimes you need agitation in order to create some type of lasting change. I think what we are lacking, though, is an infrastructure among all of these movements and organizations in a clear direction and focus. Let me just say this. I know that we all cannot do the same thing. God has crafted us and designed us to have unique talents and specialties and areas of interest. And there's a phenomenal book that was written called The Seven Mountains of Influence. And according to the Seven Mountains of Influence, those mountains are arts, education, religion, media, family, government, and business. Now, all of us operate in one of those mountains. And so whatever you can do within your own level of influence, you should do something for your voice to be heard and for not just praying and not just talking, but doing something to walk out what it is that you're talking out.
Yeah, definitely. The doing part is the key ingredient that the majority of us are missing, including those officers who sit there and say, I don't know why I did what I did. The majority of them are operating from a space of, and this was very interesting. We had a town hall meeting of great influencers and people from our entertainment community, Black and Brown, and we got together in a space of absolute desperation and frustration over the events that have been happening over the course of these past few weeks that seem to be escalating as each day goes by. And one of the things that we discussed was when an officer, somebody said, well, they need to start, this is deplorable because police officers should in these encounters with a citizen, they need to shoot to wound because they're trained to do that. That's a fallacy. Police officers are not trained to wound. They're trained to center in on the area which we would understand to be the chest area, and they are trained to keep shooting until that person stops or is no longer a threat. Now, here's what needs to happen. See, because that's a fallacy. We all watch too many television shows, even though I am in that community. We watch too many television shows and movies. Officers are not trained to shoot and wound. They're trained to stop the whatever they perceive to be the threat. Here's what needs to begin. What needs to begin is we need to redefine what is a threat.
Okay.
We need to have a better understanding of who groups of people are. We need to have a better understanding of when people, when the media puts out that there is a problem of black on black crime. That's absolutely not true with regards to whether it's black or it's white. People commit crimes against those that live where they live. If you look at the statistics, 80% of white crime is against who? White people. Why? Because that's who they live around. So it's not like black folks live around black and brown people and they're going, okay, there's a white person. Nope, I won't commit crime against him. There's a white person. Nope, not him. There's a black person. Yep, I'm going to commit crimes against them. That's not what they do. So this whole notion of black-on-black crime is a ridiculous notion because it's just about where you live and the people that you live around. And so what we have to begin to do is we need to rethink what those things are, and people need to be educated about what is really going on. People commit crimes for the most part out of a need or a necessity that isn't being met. And police officers, unfortunately, seem to be committing these particular crimes when it comes to areas of affluence or areas that are predominantly white. Police officers have a notion to protect and serve. And when they come to our community, they seem to have a notion of rid criminal presence from the street. And unfortunately, those are the taxpaying citizens who, albeit may be struggling, but are still citizens nonetheless.
Gotcha. That was real good. So there obviously needs to be more town hall meetings, and but you said something about, you know, it's not necessarily a black on black crime, you know, but it's just crime in general. But let's talk about because I've heard different stance on it, and even my beliefs and stuff. Let's talk about the black community, though, in our community. We're talking about Black Lives Matter. We're talking about, you know, we're doing marches and visuals and all of those things. But do you think that there needs to be a change even in our music that is still promoting killing our people and killing each other and robbing each other?
Let me just say this. I while that would be great, I think that would be great, but nobody says that about Arnold Schwarzenegger making a movie like Terminator, and then when, like I said, there's still 80% crimes that white people commit against each other. Nobody talks about that. So this notion that somehow the entertainment community has to do a better job of putting out messages that our children can consume that will uplift our people, I think is unfair. I think it would be I think it would be great, but I think it's unfair. What we really need to do is we really need to focus on the fact that our communities are operating at a deficit. We're operating from a space where the male influence is not powerful enough in a state of manhood, which is why we created the Manhood Tour. We need to get into a space where we turn out more men than we turn out males. There are a bunch of grown males running around our communities that are further having our communities operate from a space of deficit. So when you have, look at gangs, for instance. When you have gang participation, you've got young males that are running around void of a manhood model that they can mirror. So subsequently what happens is they begin running around with these gangs out of a space of need because they're not having their needs met. They're not getting loved properly, and they're not being trained properly. So when I say that, they'll be around their mom. Their mom's voice will begin to sound like the teacher on Charlie Brown, right? It begins to sound off at a frequency that they can't even hear anymore. They know they need something. They know they need particular messaging, but they know that it's not coming from this feminine space that they're hearing it from. So when they go out on the street and they hear a brother's voice who unfortunately is giving them the wrong messaging, they realize that it's coming from the right packaging. It's coming from a male space. So they go, this is closer than the messaging I'm getting from this feminine space. What they don't realize is that they're getting the wrong messaging from the right packaging. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to deliver the right messaging coming from the right packaging, which will turn out more men and release them into our communities that will begin to put our communities in a virtual state of triage that will resuscitate where manhood is and what state it is in our communities.
I like that, man. I just relaunched a mentoring piece, and it's actually called Training Young Men for Manhood. And that, man, you hit it on the nail. I would say that is the problem where that role model. Like, I remember when I was growing up, man, we had several things, positive things that we just had that male figure. I mean, we had, you know, we had that uncle, that neighborhood. I remember in our neighborhood, we had a guy, his name was Mr. Dancy, but he taught us about, you know, yard work. He taught us, you know, about different things, and, you know, we're missing that piece. So, man, that's definitely good. I really would love to. Matter of fact, well, let's take a few minutes and let's talk about the Manhood Tour. that you guys are on. Definitely would love to connect on that piece as well. I believe that this part of what you guys are doing is really going to help shape our community and change our community, where our men can be back in their rightful place and rearing and bringing up positive young men in our community, such as you guys are. So tell us about the Manhood Tour, you know, and all that it entails, and the different cities and things that you guys are headed to.
Well, so let me tell you why the Manhood Tour is necessary. Over the last 20, 30 years or so, you know, women in particular have had all types of support groups and conferences and symposiums, and justifiably so, because in this particular society, they've been denied rights, they've been denied equality. And so once they've obtained that and now entered into corporate America and sought to empower themselves, they banded together in terms of empowering their gender group. And as women have developed themselves, our development has been arrested, and it seems as though there has not been the same focus or push towards the development of men. And so we felt a need to speak to this issue. Now, yes, there are many organizations across the country that do great work and speak to different demographics of men, but we felt the need to come together because we're three individual voices who have strong commonality and one clear message, and that is, we're training, as Dondre said, males how to be men and teaching those men how to live their manhood out in the highest degree. And so we have what we call manhood tour stops, where we travel around the country in major cities as well as not so major, some rural cities as well, doing symposiums and having conferences, really educating the community. In addition to that, we have a plan to begin to do a fatherhood and man awards ceremonies where we honor men in the community who have stepped up and fulfilled the role of a father to their child or a father to their community. We also have virtual conferences that we do where people who possibly can't come to a local event, but yet they can call in or tune in online and be a part of a discussion where we begin to empower them. We also want to focus on the young African-American or men of color, young men, males of color, teaching them from a young age. Because, you know, at the end of the day, what you put in a young child, if you give them the right tools and the core principles, they will carry that out as they enter into adulthood. And so this is a universal message that we know applies to males of all ages, and we're seeing that type of transformation take place right before our very eyes.
Mm. So how can we connect with this, with the Manhood Tour and the Manhood Father and Son Awards? How can we connect with you and possibly bring you to our local community?
Well, the first thing you can do is you can go to themanhoodtour.com website, and you could subscribe and join our email list to find out about events that we're doing both virtually and locally across the country. And listen, we get requests in all the time. So if you're an organization, if you're a church, if you're a college or a university community organization that has a desire to bring us in, we're a phone call and an email away. This is what we are here to do. And wherever we're given a platform is where we're going to go to make a major impact, you know, on the community.
Cool. That's awesome, man. I'm happy to get with you. Definitely would love to get some more information on that, and would love to sit in and one of your sessions or seminars or workshops. So definitely.
Let me just quickly address, and then Dondre, you can feel free to piggyback. One of the questions you asked earlier, you mentioned, can music do a better job of creating better messages within their music? And of course, music can. But I would say that all of us have a role to play. All of us take on a level of responsibility in terms of bettering ourselves. I think that parents need to do a better job in the homes. I think that the church needs to play a more active role in the community than it has for the last 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, if we look at the black church historically, the black church has always been involved in the community. In fact, when you think about the civil rights movement, they led that movement. And it's interesting that the Black Lives Matter movement does not involve clergy, does not involve the church. So where's the voice of the church? I can't find it. Now, though there are individuals within the body who are speaking up collectively, I believe that we need to do more. Those who are in media, those who are in the arts, we all need to do our part. And if we're all doing our part, we win. But when any of us point the finger at one particular area and say, you need to do better, we have to realize that there are three fingers pointing back at us, which means that we have to look at ourselves three times as hard as we do anyone or anything else in order to really solve this problem.
Particularly as a parent, you know, I can't sit here as a parent who my child is coming from out of my home, and then I turn around and say, you know, it's the music. What kind of music, what kind of music are you creating in your home? That's the music we should be focusing on. Meaning, what kind of lyrics do you sing to your children? Not the lyrics that are coming off the radio. What are the lyrics that are coming out of your mouth? That's the music you need to be focused on. That's the music we need to pay closer attention to. Because honestly, a child only gravitates towards the behavior, the messaging, the language that comes from their parent, because they mirror what they see modeled for them. And what's being modeled for them on a regular basis. So every single day, if you'll notice, if you look at my, if you ever get a chance to watch my son's behavior, if you ever get a chance to watch my daughter's behavior, you will see much of my own behavior. My daughter recently went to camp. She suffered second-degree burns from a from some water that was overboiled. It was at the negligence of a counselor. The first thing that she said to me when I picked her up was, "Dad, can you make sure that my counselor doesn't get in trouble?" She didn't mean it.
Wow.
What my daughter was doing, she's 11 years old, what she was really saying was, "Dad, we need to give her the grace that God gives us every single day."
Wow.
She was able to give that to me. Why? Because that's the model of grace that I give her to mirror. So immediately upon me picking her up, she immediately wanted to make sure that her counselor didn't get in trouble, because she thought it was more important that we give her the kind of grace that God gives us every day. Again, that's modeling that a child can mirror. That's what we need to take a closer look at every single day as parents.
Wow. So, that's good. I like that. And you know, that is true. Sometimes you can tell whose kids are whose by the way they act. Not all the time.
By the way they act.
I mean,
yes, for sure. I mean, listen, there's no way for you to sit here as a smoker and you sit around, you're smoking a cigarette,
yes, sir,
and tell them don't smoke. You know what's going to happen? They're probably going to smoke. Because kids don't listen to words. They look at, they learn from behaviors.
That's right.
So they watch what you do, and they just mirror that.
Yeah, I say it all the time.
Yeah, that's
children
awesome.
Children learn through observation and participation. So you could teach all the lessons you want. They're not paying attention to a word you say. They're watching what you do. And this is what we call the family marinade. Now, if you think about cooking, if you ever want to take a marinade to change up the flavor of a meal, you would take that chicken or that meat and put the marinade in it and let it soak and saturate for a few hours, couple days. And then so when you cook it, you could taste the flavor of the marinade and the meat. Well, we all have been soaked and saturated in a family marinade. And you pick up behavioral patterns and communication styles and emotional reactions based upon what you've seen mom and dad do. So to Dondre's point, what you do in the home And the example that you give your child is the most influential. We know that the Roman Catholic Church said, if you give us your child for the first 5 years, we will have that child for the rest of our lives, because they know that psychologically and emotionally, you know, the first 5 years of a child's life are the most impressionable. And that's why we have to do a better job in our community, but more specifically with the Manhood Tour, what we're doing is we're trying to reach young, males while they are young. We're trying to get to the mothers who are raising those sons, the fathers who are having these children, teaching them the right principles so that they can pass them down to their children and their children's children.
Cool. Well, that's some good stuff, man. Like I said, I definitely am interested in knowing more about that. Once again, give us that website where they can go to the website and learn more about the Manhood Tour.
It's www.themanhoodtour.com. You can also follow us on Facebook as well as Twitter. Just type in Manhood Tour or The Manhood Tour, and we should pop up. And, you know, we're always sharing videos and posts and all types of things to really empower and enlightening those who follow our thread and our blogs. And we're excited about it because we know that we're making a major difference in the lives of people. And what we're actually seeing, people are starting to catch on to the message, and now we're starting to have local chapters, manhood chapters that are popping up in different parts of the country. And so we're excited about the impact that we're making.
Wow. So there you have it. If you would like to be a part, would like for them to come to your church or nonprofit or your community or whatnot, please, by all means, hit them up and please get in touch with them. So we're going to bounce back real quick back over to the crisis of police brutality in America. But I believe those two go hand in hand. So from this point, from this day forward, how can we help our people going forward, dealing with this this battle with the police? What advice can you give? Do's, don'ts, tools to fight them in a different way than what we've been fighting back. Let's take it from that angle.
Dondre, do you want to start that?
Yeah, I literally, for the sake of our tour, we shot our comprehensive video that will probably go viral tomorrow about how to better navigate these police encounters.
Okay.
One of the things that I talk about in the video is that in lieu of someone, most people are not bad. Even these police officers, and I know it's very easy for us in the black and brown community to say, all police officers are bad. That's actually
right.
Not true. The majority of police officers are actually good police officers, well-intentioned, however misinformed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what doesn't allow a person to show up as their best self is not having the skill sets that allows them to properly manage themselves or the situation at hand.
Okay.
And subsequently what happens is what we've been seeing on CNN, MSNBC, YouTube, and so on and so forth, Facebook, Twitter, these are the things that have been played out in the public, and these tragic situations have been playing out regularly lately.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening in our community is we have been watching things for years where we see Caucasian people being belligerent, acting out, just speaking from all angles towards police officers. Now, as a citizen, you should be able to voice your opinion
mm-hmm.
and not be shot for doing so.
Right.
Unfortunately, again, this gets back to the space where I said many of these officers are operating from a space where they're fearful of groups of people that they don't encounter very often, or encounter them in a space where they just see them in one particular way. Now, if we were being honest and we operated from a space where we dealt with our people in underserved areas or areas that we would consider the inner city, and we were dealing with our folks from just that particular point of view, we in the black and brown communities would absolutely say, because we know, we've said it very often, and I've heard it from a number of different people. Hey, man, look, don't go over there in that area because they ain't playing no games over there. That's dangerous.
Right.
Many
right,
of us
right.
say that about areas that we come from. I grew up in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Listen, let me tell you something. You knew that there were certain spaces that you didn't go near, that you didn't operate in. Otherwise, you could get yourself in trouble. And we are black and brown people. And we know that there are certain areas that we grew up in that you don't mess around in. Now, can you imagine being a person, a Caucasian person who's already fearful of black and brown people who they don't get to experience very often in their life, and then they're trying to simply make it home to their loved ones every single day? And you're sitting there and you're going, wow, because I don't encounter them very much and I don't speak that language very often, this feels like a dangerous space for me, and all I'm trying to do is make it home
and
at the end
home.
Of the night. Now,
Well, now, so let me ask you something real quick. Let me ask you. So are you saying that basically, contrary to what we believe, that this cop didn't just wake up today to say, man, I'm going to kill me a black person today? Right.
Exactly. That's
but
ridiculous.
Given the situation
yes.
and the lack of understanding, being nervous because of, like you said, where he hit, maybe because of his background, you know, maybe he has not dealt with blacks one-on-one like that. So within the height of that situation is a mixture of his nerves, his ignorance, and then – again, I believe, I don't know if it was you or Hassani at the beginning of the show that said not knowing how to – I forget what you said. But all of these things mixing in a melting pot is what has created what we have seen on YouTube and what we have seen on the news.
It creates the perfect storm, because what you're talking about is a person – remember – what I said earlier was that we actually think that police officers have great skill sets. They don't. They don't. They are literally trained how to handle a weapon. They're literally trained how to stop something that they deem to be a threat. Once you deem anything to be a threat, they're not trained to shoot to wound, put somebody down, shoot them in the leg. That's in a movie. That's in a TV show. That kind of training does not exist. Any of the police departments that I know of in this country, and I've spoken to a myriad of different commissioners, police chiefs, this kind of training does not exist in this country. And so now what you're dealing with is the perfect storm of someone who is fearful of people who they don't get to engage except in an environment where it is highly toxic. So when you deal with a police officer who lives in the suburbs doesn't live in the community that they police. They're literally looking at people, albeit citizens. They're literally looking at them as perps or perpetrators of crimes because when they deal with them, that's the space that they operate from. They're dealing from a space where they're going, wow, the last time I dealt with someone who looked like this, I was either fired upon, I was cursed out, I was dealing from a space where there was an aggression, and our aggression comes from a righteous space where we're dealing from a place where we are profoundly hurt, which causes us great anger. And so now when I encounter a police officer who's pulling me over for what I believe to be no reason, I now get aggressive with them and say, what you pulling me over for? I bet you wouldn't pull over no white boy for that. And so now we come from this space of aggression. And so now because we're loud talking, now because we're throwing our hands all about, an officer who really doesn't want to shoot anybody is now sitting there going, I don't know whether I'm encountering someone who is trying to hurt me or someone who is just raising their voice. Remember that they view a black and brown male as someone who is threatening already. So now when I encounter you and I can't see in your car because the windows are up or the windows might be tinted, or here's another one that doesn't work. Here's what the video covers. Here's one that doesn't work. Is there a problem, officer? In his mind, in his mind, there is a problem. Otherwise, he wouldn't have pulled you over.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, in his mind, there is a problem, right? So to be met with the space of, is there a problem, doesn't help our cause. So in the video, what I'm literally showing us to do is I used to go out like we all do. I used to go out and say, oh, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. I go outside. I got my wallet. My registration and my insurance are somewhere in the car, and I'll just look for that whenever it comes up. Nope, no more. The common thread that I've seen with every black and brown male that has been killed, shot, or aggressively dealt with has had this commonality. They've all moved about in a space that made an officer feel uncomfortable. And because they operate from this space of fear, now they feel like they're fighting for their very lives. You hear this all the time.
Right.
I shot him because I was in fear of my life. I was in fear of my life. Now, of course, to us, we're going, dude, I watched that tape. That's ridiculous.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
Right.
But to him,
but we don't know what was.
Right. Right.
So real quick, let's go ahead and bring the other guest, Mr. Brian Heat. He's made it, and welcome to the show, man. How are you, Sergeant?
Blessed. Deepest apologies getting there. I was coming from the studio, but I made it on the call. How's everybody doing?
All is well. So, man, we're chiming in to the topic, the crisis of police brutality, man. And Brother Dondre has been dropping some heavy knowledge on us, and Brother Hassani. So, man, come on in. Feel free to jump in whenever you feel like it, and you know that's where we at.
I will say this, and I'll pass it right back to Dondre. Is that again? I apologize for my lateness. I actually was doing the final interviews for a project that I'm working on called "Living in an Age of No Convictions." That talks about living in a time period and the context surrounding what does it feel like, look like, the whole thing about living in a time period where police are feel the freedom to kill unarmed black people, and we see no justice served. So my spirit is heavy. The Manhood Tour and I, we were on a call earlier today, and we were exchanging just some feelings on how this made our spirit feel. But we all responded that we did not want to simply find ourselves tweeting and reposting, but we wanted to engage the problem from a problem-solving standpoint. So I know Dondre worked on a video on behalf of the Manhood Tour about dealing with police officers during traffic stops and things of that nature. And, again, being on the radio show tonight, so I'm glad to be on. This is the only issue I'm really looking at right now in terms of the country's tone and culture. And, you know, our people are dying, and we need our voices to speak up.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Dondre, you said something that it used to be a thing, and I agree. It used to be a thing where when you get pulled over, I'll send her somewhere. I'm licensed to carry, and I carry. And when I tell you, when I get pulled over, actually, I just experienced probably last week. I have a limo service, and I was on my way to go pick up a bride, and I was speeding a little bit. But normally, when I get pulled over, or normally when they run my tag, like they just let me go. They don't bother me, you know, and it's all good. But this particular cop, you know, I guess he wanted to go ahead and take time with me. Normally, like I said, it's just a quick stop. Hey, Mr. Good, da 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 da. Keep moving. But now, man, what I do is, because most of the time when they run, well, all the time when they run my plates, they already know that I'm licensed. And so the way they already approach the vehicle, I mean, of course, they don't see any, you know, it comes back clean. But when I tell you, man, my hands are up to the ceiling. They stay there. It's no, sir. Yes, sir. I was explaining to some young guys, and you guys can chime in on this piece right here. I don't believe that is the time for us to try to prove our manhood, to try to prove that I'm a man too, you know, considering the situation. You know, here it is. I'm a black man. I have a loaded gun, even though I am licensed. And here again, another situation where in some cases, like you said, if they don't have the experience of dealing with a black man, you know, it would be easy for them to put us all in the same category. So would you agree or disagree that when you're being pulled over, your goal should be to just make it out of that traffic stop alive?
Absolutely. Listen,
first of all, let me just get back to you, and then I'm going to pass it to Hassani. Let me just get it back to this. I want to make a couple of quick points, and then again, I'm going to pass it to Hassani. I have a black wife, I got a black son, and I got a black daughter. My responsibility during these encounters is to get my black self home to my black wife, my black son, and my black daughter. The time for me to prove my quote-unquote manhood is not in a space where I am outnumbered and outgunned. Even you, who is carrying a gun, you're still outnumbered and outgunned in this video
that
I'm talking about. What I came up with was a care package. So when I get in the car now, I literally have paper clips, and it's a subliminal thing. I have a blue paper clip. Let's see if the subliminal message will resonate. I got a blue paper clip that has my license, my registration, and my insurance card together already. When I get pulled over, I literally pull the car over, turn the car off, put the key on top of my dash along with my care package that has my license, registration, and insurance clipped to it. My windows go down. I want the officer coming up on my vehicle to be able to see inside my vehicle
so that
they can see there is no threat to their person. When the officer comes up to my window, first thing that comes out of my mouth is, "Officer, I mean you no disrespect and I mean you no harm. My credentials are in front of me on my desk. Now, here's what just happened. I just won 50% of the battle. Some people,
right,
I heard
right.
somebody say, well, I ain't about to be subservient for these people. Let me tell you something, fam. I don't have a subservient
bone. You
want to
go home alive, you will.
Okay? I don't have a subservient bone in my body. Coming from a space of strength, leadership, and clarity. The clarity
right.
is that I'm playing chess. And I'm about to
right.
win. So when you go on a date, when you take someone out on a date, the objective is to get them to like you. When you're in an encounter with a police officer, our objective is to get them to like our character. What I just did was I won 50% of the character battle because I didn't greet him with the, is there a problem, officer? You know that there's some sort of problem.
Right.
Otherwise, they would have pulled you over. Now, whether you think you should have been pulled over or not doesn't matter. Your job now is to get them to see that you have a valid license, valid
mm-hmm.
registration and insurance, so you can get the heck on about your business. Once they see all of that, once they see, oh, wow, you know what? I didn't get no problems out of this. The majority of the time, you are going to get a, thank you for that. You know, didn't mean that. I was just letting you know, so-and-so and so-and-so, this was the situation, blah, 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 blah. Okay, have a good one. What we forget is police officers are not robots. They're human beings. So
right.
if the last person that they pulled over or the person that they, their wife, they got into an altercation with their wife before they left the house, the last person that they
mm-hmm.
pulled over, whatever it is that set them off and that got them pissed off, when they pull you over and you give them more of that aggression or more of that, all they do now is say, you know what? All right, come on, get out of the car. You want to make life hard for me? I'm going to make life hard for you.
Right.
We are flawed human beings, and that's what we're dealing with right now, flawed human beings that lack skill sets, and that's how we got to operate until we get legislation changed, until we get the screening process of potential police officers changed, and until we get change in the way we train and retrain officers, these are the things that we must do in order to better survive these encounters. Hassani,
mm-hmm.
it's all yours.
I 1,000% agree with everything that Don
yes,
said.
Sir.
And, you know, if I could just be 100% honest, I do not romanticize
okay.
our people. I am not that individual that says that the police officer is always wrong and we're always in the right. I mean, if we truly
right.
analyze a lot of the situations, not all but some, we have helped to fuel the fire, if you will, or the flame.
I 100% agree.
Because of how we react. However, we have to recognize that there is an element. Now, I can't speak to what percentage it is, and I can't tell you what's in the heart of any police officer, whether it be ignorance or whether it be fear or whether it be hate, whatever it is. Just like we want to make it home at night, they want to make it home at night as well. And so whatever
right.
is fueling these incidents to occur, something is happening. We know that there have been several examples of African-American men who have done absolutely nothing wrong, not all, some of them, and there has still been an act of aggression. There has still been the loss of life. And so while I think it's important that we identify the specific officer who's involved in that particular act, and I think that justice should be served, we also have to look at the larger picture because there is a system that is protecting and defending these police officers who have been proven to be out of line and out of order and have done things wrong. And now you have lawmakers that are passing laws to further protect and to further defend those who are wrong. So it's more than just trying to remove that officer, but as Dondre said, is working on legislation, is going to our lawmakers, is dealing with this effort on a local municipality type of level, trying to figure out what is the hiring process, what is the training process, is there accountability board when things go wrong. So, you know, my focus is really on the church. So what I'm seeing is that there's so many churches that are doing a great job of praying, but the word does say faith without works is dead. So listen, you pray as if everything depends upon God, but you work and operate as if everything depends upon you. And while we have power in the spiritual realm, certain things we have to take physical authority over. So if that means getting more involved in a local on a local level, writing letters to your councilmen, your congressmen, your state senators, whatever the case may be, we need to do something that is in an organized type of movement that will cause some type of change. If we know anything about
can I ask you a question real quick about that? You said something about the church. Can we really be honest? Is the church really in the place that it should be, that it used to be?
No,
in situations like this?
No, it is not. Let me ask you a question. When we saw an individual enter into a church and commit congregational genocide on people within a congregation, kill them, and then he leaves, and the first thing we do, our natural knee-jerk reaction, we got to forgive. I mean, there was no call to action. There were no steps, no procedures in place to deal with it. I remember back in the day in the 60s when you had something called the Deacons for Defense. Now, these were deacons and elders who protected their church. They were licensed gun owners, just like you, a believer, who protected their church from them being bombed, from them being set on fire, because that was the pressure that the church was under at that particular time. And I think that if we're going to be students of history, we have to figure out what worked and apply those principles, and whatever didn't work, throw those things out. But we need to do things that are long-lasting and produce change. And I'm just simply saying, if the church is not what it used to be, we need to get back to what we used to do in order to get a result that we've never had in quite some time.
I agree. Because, when we look at today, I get a chance to go and speak and or sing at different churches. And unfortunately, the church, their mindset is not community. And let me say this, not all churches, a lot of churches, trying to be the next big thing, popular thing, the biggest church, and our focus is so off. It's not community driven anymore. And again, I will say some churches, because there are some churches that are out in the community that are walking the neighborhoods, that are feeding the homeless and doing the things that we were called to do to come out of the four walls of the church. But on the flip side of it, there are a lot of churches who I feel like the church is not in the place where it used to be. The church was our go-to. The church was the place where we found answers and found refuge. But now the church is the main place that we're running from. We're trying to get farther and farther away from the church now because we're going there, but we're not leaving with anything.
One thing that I do respect about a religious organization, the Nation of Islam, those brothers focus on manhood. They deal with manhood training. They're very active in the community. Their presence is known. They're well-respected. Whether you agree with their religious beliefs or not, in terms of how they carry themselves and the sort of protection that they provide their community, it's quite evident and strong. And I think that the church is now, it's the butt of every joke. It doesn't get respected at all, and I think the leadership on down to the laity have a lot to do with the representation, if you will. But I just think that collectively we need to do a better job. And the reason why I bring the church up is because you're dealing with a leader who represents a large constituency of people. There's major influence, there's major impact, there are major resources, major funds. And if we come together in a united front, there's a lot of great work we can do. And that's why I'm excited about Dondre and Brian and myself, working with churches and other organizations, community organizations, corporate organizations to really make an impact in a powerful way.
Real good. And I'm sorry I cut you off. You can continue back what you were saying. I heard that, and, that just kind of jogged something that I had in my head when you were talking about the church, the church not being that place anymore. But continue. I'm sorry.
No, I would love to pass it off to Brian and really get him into this conversation. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
at the end of the day, the biggest piece that I know that we've talked about within the Manhood Tour is the piece of justice. That no matter what type of crime, when we talked about the black-on-black crime that happens in some urban communities across the country, and people like to throw that in the conversation with regards to, well, you guys kill yourself every day. Why do you make such a uproar when it comes to police brutality? And a couple of things fell on my spirit. One is that these police officers took a sanctioned, sworn oath to protect and serve the community.
And to serve.
So when you are making mistakes in judgment based upon fear and prejudice, you are actually killing in the name of that local government. It's a sanctioned murder. Secondly, what also tends to happen is the black and Latino and the males in these black communities that are killing themselves, 9 times out of 10, they are caught, they are prosecuted, and they are put in jail. So what we're really looking for is equality of justice, that we understand that as a police officer, you're going to come into an encounter where you will have to use your firearm. And it may require you to take a life, but if you do it and it's out of protocol, it was unjustified, unwarranted, what is drawing people to protest and lift their voice is that we are not seeing justice. And it goes back to that blue wall of silence, that blue line of silence, where police officers have vowed to themselves that before I am a citizen, before I am an empathetic citizen, I am a committed police officer, and I'm not going to hold my fellow officers to the same standard I'm actually holding the citizens of this country. And again, it makes me sick to my spirit. And again, what I piggybacking off of Dondra and Asani, specifically regarding making sure our young men are walking around equipped, fully in their manhood, to understand to set the priority of their life that their job is to get home, and to really try to flex a perceived manhood inside of a vehicle is the wrong moment, and the ratio of you making it out is going to put you in a pine box 6 feet deep. And that's why it's so important for more of our black men to go into these communities and do some mentoring to give our young kings the proper mindset and skill set and language to handle navigating police officers.
Right. Right. That's good. That's good. So this is a battle that it's just, it's gonna be it's an uphill battle from here, you know, and we need more. Either we need more people to join the Manhood Tour, or you know, other organizations, as you said, our brothers going into the neighborhoods and mentoring. I definitely agree with that. It just makes you sick and not want to just. I don't even watch the news hardly anymore. That's how, when I find out about stuff is now, because if I'm on social media or something, and I may see it on there, but it's just sad, man. And I just wish we can get to a place to where we can have, as I said earlier, the town hall meetings, and we can just sit down and we can talk to these cops and talk to whites and blacks, talk to, you know, we talk to each other, get to know each other, get an understanding of, you know, well, this is what this mean, or when I do this or say this, you know, have that. I know it might sound too good to be true or whatnot, you know, but I don't know, Hassan, am I living in a fairy tale world?
No. I think that the more we all come together, because at the end of the day, we have to realize that when we deal with these issues, it's a very polarizing topic, and usually you'll find groups of people who fall on either side of that discussion, and we got to realize that at the end of the day, we're all on the same team fighting against the same issues. And it's not a black issue, it's not a white issue, because many black and white and brown and Latino people have come together to speak out against some of the violence, some of the aggression, some of the oppression that has been inflicted upon African Americans in specific and then other people in general. So I think that the more that we begin to speak with police officers and people from law enforcement and different sides of the community, healing will come, understanding will come. And I think at the end of the day, what Dondre was talking about is absolutely right. A lot of us are ignorant of one another, which creates the fear, which creates, mm-hmm. in some respect, the hatred and the racism that exists. And we need to understand who the real enemy is, and it's not us. It's a spiritual war that we're fighting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That right there, when we understand, you know, like you said, first of all, who we are, when we understand, and then understand who the real enemy is. Hold on, let's see. We had lost Brian. Okay, Brian, you there? I see Dondre,
so
you're there. Okay.
It's me again. I just wanted to I just wanted to drop in real quick because I have a meeting that we have to get to, one of 1 4-hour manhood tour. So, and I know I'm gonna drop out of here soon because of signal. But I just wanted to say thank you for this conversation. My brothers are gonna stay on. Thank you for this conversation. It has been extraordinarily stimulating. These are more of the kinds of think tanks, if you will, that we need to have happen throughout the country about what's going on, about managing our own expectations for our black and brown communities, until we can get proper legislation passed and different governing authorities to come in and to better screen these potential officers and to better train and retrain them. But in the meantime, we need to be able to give our own community the skill sets that will better navigate these encounters. And I'm just really thankful that we have this platform to be able to share those thoughts.
Man, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule as well and dropping your knowledge that you dropped tonight, man. It was definitely well needed, appreciated. And, you know, man, I definitely took some notes as well. And we hope that, you know, you don't be a stranger and that you definitely come back, man, and help us with some other topics and whatnot. And hopefully we will see you, you know, when we drop in on one of the manhood tours or seminars or something like that.
Without a doubt. Brother Hassani and he, y'all go ahead.
Awesome, man. Talk to you soon. Real quick, I want to throw into the pot, guys, and Hassani, I think we might have spoke about it earlier. One of the last interviews I just had this evening was from an educator. He's an MC. His name is Asheru. You actually would be familiar with this music. He did the intro to the first Boondocks. So if you're familiar with the Boondocks franchise, every song that came on when it was coming on TV was through this artist. One of the things he talked about was making sure that people right now are dealing with the traumatic stress of seeing these killings. So I don't think that's something that people are talking about enough, that when you have social media – and you're flipping through Instagram, you're flipping through your timeline, and all you see is 100 different posts of Alton Sterling getting killed, 100 different posts of Philando Castile, and then you see Instagram stills of their funerals and people crying. You have to know that it is definitely impacting and hurting the spirit of our culture. Because
yes.
Death, every morning we're looking at death and crying and death and crying. And the thing is, we've dealt with this before, with the Trayvons, with the Tamir Rice, with the Jonathan Crawford, with the, you know, all these different individuals. And now it's gone from being culturally potentially desensitized that now we're being damaged as a culture. So we have to understand that just because we weren't Philando Castile's wife or his mother or his daughter, we are feeling, literally, empathetically feeling the death, the removal of one of our people for senseless reasons. And we need to make sure we are talking this out, more platforms like this radio show, talking to our families, talking this thing out, so we don't have this stuff resting on our spirit, because we may begin to take on the symptoms of those who leave wartime, where we now are frantic and our emotions are out of whack because we are constantly being exposed to death and oppression. So just throw that piece in. The emotional health of our people during this time frame should be discussed, and definitely discussed in more priority, because we are all feeling the implications of this at a very deep, soulful level.
Powerful point. And if I could just jump on that,
yes.
I mean, when you look at the statistics and you see that there are approximately 1,100 deaths at the hands of police officers, we can create a narrative that would suggest, oh, they're just individual police officers, those particular police. If you look at the larger scope of it, it would be reminiscent of apartheid, like what was experienced in South Africa. When you look at the worldwide statistics, we far outweigh and exceed and excel every other nation, civilized nation on the planet Earth when it comes to police officers ending the lives of its citizenry. I mean, if you look at London as an example, they've had 50 in the last year. I mean, and there's other countries all over the world. I just recently read a statistic. I don't have it in front of me. But it's just shocking to see the overwhelming difference, the huge widening gap when it comes to the loss of our lives. So we have to look at this as a crisis. And, yes, while there are individuals who we can point to, we have to understand that there's a system, there is a structure that has to be revamped, okay, that needs to be infiltrated by good-hearted individuals that want to do the right thing, that have the power of the pen to change policy and influence lawmakers to make a long-lasting change. At the end of the day, if you change the law, you change the problem.
So with that, changing the law, I think within our discussions and our town hall meetings and things, I believe that that's something that we really should be pushing is if we want to see change, let's go ahead and get into these positions. You know, let's apply for to be a cop. If you think all cops are bad, let's try to become a cop. And you, let's change. Let's be the first. Let's be the change we want to see. You be the first good cop, as you say, or you think the bad cops are getting off. You know, let's go into, you know, being an attorney or a prosecutor or things of that. You know, and that's one of the reasons why we brought the show back. Is I just didn't want to be a part of the group of people complaining without having a solution. And so I wanted this show to be a solution where we come together and we just toss ideas, thoughts, and concerns and try to come up with a solution that, you know, one piece by piece, you know, one man, one woman at a time, we can help change this nation, you know, or at least die trying, you know. And because I agree, and I believe that was Dondre, or that may have been you, I don't believe that all cops are bad, you know. And I do agree with you, Hassani, where you said that if we take a step back and look, the outcome could have been different in some cases had we approached or responded. Let me say, have we responded differently? And
well,
so
you know,
I
want to pass it off to Brian. This is going to be one of my final points, is that I believe it's twofold. So while, yes, I do believe that many more of us need to be represented within the police force, good-hearted people who really want to protect and serve the community, at the same time, I can't emphasize it enough, it's the system. I mean, let us be clear, even the Bible, you know, because – when I started to post what was happening across the country and would speak out and discuss, I had fellow Christians and believers tell me that I needed to take off my victim goggles because I was doing things the wrong way, as if I should be wearing the goggles of my oppressor. So I had a major issue with that. But just because we acknowledge that there is injustice in this society doesn't mean that we're victim-minded. But when I think about my people, we've been victimized for over 400 years. We've been raped. We've been lynched. We've been murdered. We've been maimed. We've been killed. And so there's a long history of that that still takes place today. Just a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta, Georgia, and then also in Mississippi, two black men hanged from trees that is reminiscent of slavery, but it's still taking place today. So when you read Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, the 16th verse, it clearly says, "And I saw something under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there." So we know that this goes back a long, long time. So for us to simply look at individuals who are in the system and not look at the system that protects them, I think is naive. We need to take a two-prong approach, attack. I don't want to say the word attack, wrong word, approach to really resolving this issue.
Right, right.
One of the things I like to throw in the pot as well is let me start to applaud, and I every day I try to find more and more affinity groups like this. I've been really diving into Jane Elliott and some of the workshops. If you're not familiar with Jane Elliott, she's been doing diversity training around the country, if not around the world, for years. She is a white woman. I would say she's probably in her mid to early 60s. And she does diversity training that is known around the world, where she actually specifically trains white Americans in looking at their white privilege, their white guilt, and what it truly means to be oppressed. And what I'm seeing, and I mentioned this in an interview I was on the other day, is that it is very good to see for the very first time in my lifetime. I was born in 76, so I didn't see some of the early stuff that may have happened in the 60s, but I love to see these white affinity groups that are stepping up and saying, we're going to speak out as well, that we do realize we have white privilege, we do realize there's systemic racism in this country, and we realize that our silence is condoning violence. So why don't we try? So from the Manhood Tour across the country, those affinity groups that are not African-American in nature, but you see that the injustices that are happening are really against humanity and not just African-Americans, I applaud your voice and I ask you to continue to do that.
So, again, let's throw the website out there. If you would like to be a part of this movement, I don't want to call it a group. It's a movement, the Manhood Tour movement. I didn't change y'all name. It's let's give the website again.
It's www.themanhoodtour.com. I encourage you all to go because on it you will find out all of the initiatives that we are involved in. Soon, what will be up there is our tour. So if we're coming to a city near you, we want you to participate by not only coming but bringing as many men, women, and children as you can with you, because though this is a message that we have for men, it is resonating with all members of the community and making a major impact on the lives of those within our community. You can also sign up to be a part of our newsletter so you can find out about all of our updates and all of our virtual conferences that we do. And once again, brother, listen, you've been gone for too long. You've gone away too far. You're like the prodigal son, but I'm glad that you're back home because we need this radio show to be able to impact the lives of all of your listeners. So I just want to thank you for this opportunity of having us on. It was amazing.
Oh, yes.
I look forward to the next one. And just want to say thank you.
Oh, most definitely, man. No, thank you. Thank all of you. Yes, man, we've been gone. You know, I'm happy to be back. Please, before you go, and actually we have about 5 minutes anyway till we go. You have a new book that's coming out.
Yes, I have a book that will be coming out in September. It's called The Audacity of Marriage, 10 Principles for Lifelong Partnership. For those who are listening in that are familiar with me, you know that I have a company called Couples Academy where my wife and I really impact the lives of many through their marriages, giving them principles to help them overcome the challenges that they've experienced to have the fulfilling marriage that God has promised for them. So we're excited about it. It's coming out in September. We're going to be doing a national tour. And so if you're looking for a book that will make a major difference in your life, pick up a copy in September when it's released. But I got to pass the baton to Brian because this is also another author with a couple of projects on the table. Brian, tell me about what you're doing.
First of all, thank you again for letting us get on. I recently dropped my first book. I dropped in December, the top of the year, called Beautiful Power, A Love Letter to Black Women. It was my my observation was that it felt like to me that the media was beginning to, and really wasn't beginning to, was actually doing it, was reframing our queens in a very negative light. That every single time I turned on the television, that that phenomenal woman that Maya Angelou so perfectly captured in her poem, we no longer were seeing that archetype of our queens. So I began to think about actually putting a book out there that would empower and lift women up. So it's called Beautiful Power. It's doing very well on Amazon, and it has a corresponding inspirational stage experience, and we'll be touring around the country soon. But I'm also very excited because I'll be traveling the country starting in August with my Ignite the School Year campaign. I'm a 15-year educator, so I have some custom-made explosive notes and some professional development training for educators that I'll be in Denver in August, and I'll also be in I'll be in Dallas, and doing some of the stuff with the Manhood Tour as well. So we're all very productive. To me, you can't win the game if you're not playing. You can't win the game if you're not playing. I tell everyone on the call, find a way to engage these issues, to engage these problems through your natural gifts. Everyone wasn't born to be the revolution on the front line locking down interstates. Everyone wasn't born to do that. Find a way to engage the problem, engage the conversation, engage these issues through your gifts and your talents, and I guarantee you will feel fulfilled and you'll feel like you're really a part of the conversation.
Good stuff, good stuff. Listen, you guys definitely, Hassani, I know you definitely will be back sooner or later. But Brian, man, anytime you have anything going on, and Brother Dondre, anytime, please, you know, this is your home. Please let us know. Please send us, you know, information where we can get out. One last thing, the Manhood Tours, when you actually are in different cities and doing different things, is there a cost, is there registration, or is that something they can find out online as well?
Yeah, they'll be able to find all that information out online about the tour stop in the city near you. So just stay tuned, stay plugged in, and be a part of the movement.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, want to thank you guys for coming out and taking time out of your busy schedule to help us tackle this topic. I appreciate you. Appreciate you guys for all the knowledge that you dropped on us tonight. If you want to hear the show again, you can always go back to www.1821speakliferadio and click the button that says listen. You can go back and listen to past shows. And we also have some past shows of Mr. Hassani when he's been with us. So if you want to go back and listen to some of the things that we have done then. Again, meet us here next week, same time, same place, www.1821speakliferadio.com. You have a blessed day, and remember, always, always speak life.